Thank you very much, François. Michael, I think we'll turn the floor over to you for the final presentation.
Earlier, I gave you kind of a walkthrough of the guide. Now, I'm going to give you a few examples from the field. I've been doing this across a lot of countries, a lot of regions, across the spectrum, land, water, extractives, conflicts. And I thought that today I'll walk you through three examples from the field. I've decided to take recent ones, places that I've been in the last 2 years, in and out on missions called in to deal with the conflict dynamic. And I'm just going to go through them one at a time. In each one, I'm going to give you a sense of some context, an idea of the sort of engagement that was involved, and extract a lesson learned or an observation out of it. And I'm just going to go through them, starting and one at a time, and trying to get a sort of a variety as well of picking from what I've been doing over the last 2 years, a little variety in terms of resource sector and region. First, transboundary or cross-border water conflicts in Central Asia, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan. Context, briefly, very complicated border lines through and around areas of ethnic identity. Water, a very limited resource, aridity, unsustainable agricultural practices, and a poorly maintained water infrastructure, dams, canals that was inherited from the Soviet era. Ongoing tension and conflict is related to water issues is very prevalent at the local level in the cross-border areas. And at the same time, at the central level, very limited engagement between the states around the issues of water tension. So I was called in, went, and I think each of these examples are from when I was the UN senior mediation expert on resources and land conflicts with the Department of Political Affairs. The engagement, first, there was a decision in the UN to engage and to use the local level of the conflict dynamic as an entry point. We've already mentioned that resource conflicts tend to operate and be expressed at a multiplicity of levels, local, sort of provincial, departmental, state, and often internationally. So the decision was to use the local level as the entry point, given that the central government level between the countries was largely closed. At the local level, I worked with women's organizations on both sides of the border, brought them together. We used mediation approaches to bring them together to help them analyze the conflict dynamic, analyze their options, and as a result of that, we helped them make decisions jointly. Long story short, the process turned into a joint planning process in which they put together a collaborative framework at the local level for water management. At the central level, we then used the entry point that we had, working within the UN system, to help design a binational strategy between the two UN country offices that is now going to start playing itself out to support the central level governments. There exists a joint water commission that has been relatively unused. So we use the dynamic at the local level to then work towards generating some momentum at the central level to then support the same dialogue around the water conflict through central level mechanisms. A few lessons or observations on this. One, although we often talk about natural resources and its risk for conflict, I thought this was interesting because it's an example where natural resources offer us the potential for collaboration and peace building across issues of divide. Secondly, I think it's an interesting example because, as I said, most natural resource disputes tend to operate at a multiplicity of levels, and the strategic use of those different levels to find entry points but also the importance that when you're looking at resource conflicts, one has to be very conscious of those different levels and how can you, what are the potential linkages or what are the essential linkages between the different levels when you're thinking through a strategy, an engagement strategy. And then third, it's an example of working actively with women. Not only because they're important resource users, but also because of the collaborative potential offered when working with women around resource conflicts. Secondly, another example, hydroelectric and mining conflicts, Guatemala. Context. We see natural resources at this point in time, anyone knows the dynamic, is that are very closely associated with high degrees of conflictivity, or la conflictividad social, as it is called in Guatemala, violence, human rights violations, and political instability. In the context, there had been community leaders and security forces that had both been killed around hydro and mining sites before I was called down. Quite just a few weeks before I was down, the president had declared a state of national emergency and called in the army to one of the sites. Also, it's important to reflect upon the structural and systemic problems, a part of the context here. The structural and systemic problems of extremely weak governance, limited rule of law, and a series of unresolved land issues that go back in time and corruption. This is all sort of the context. Important to note as well, what I mentioned a little earlier, is we're talking about a situation, 35 years of civil war, the peace process was in the mid-1990s, and the peace agreements, very robust, addressed natural resources and land issues. So it's an example also in the context of, there's a series So I guess I'll leave that as the context. In terms of the engagement, the request was to use mediation to resolve these disputes. It involved extensive engagement with a wide range of actors, community groups, government actors, the church, companies involved. In terms of also my engagement, very early in my time there, I had to clarify that mediation isn't a tool that's going to solve structural or systemic problems at the level of individual projects. So I had to kind of talk through the reality of what are the tools and where are they able to be used. That said, there were other tools that can be useful. They don't necessarily solve the dispute, but they can be very useful in terms of improving things. And we're talking tools related to greater transparency, better communication, more respectful spaces of dialogue, building greater capacity for the people to talk, the different parties to be able to talk, better communication, and to talk and engage constructively, and building the ability to negotiate to see more options for engagement other than the quickly resorting to violence. Concretely, we set up a series of dialogues around one of the particular disputes that was being looked at. It involved the local archbishop, and it involved the president. The local archbishop was essential because that was what brought legitimacy to the process. The president in the context wouldn't have alone, but the archbishop was able to bring that and get people to the table. But at the same time, I had to be very clear that ultimately, there's a need to address the structural and systemic issues around natural resources and land at the national level. Now, that said, I'm not suggesting a naivete that was necessarily going to be addressed very quickly given the political context. Lessons or observations out of this. One, mediation per se is not always the perfect tool, but a wide range of related mediation approaches can still be very effective in reducing violence and saving lives and bringing people together around something that is causing conflict and tension. Also a reflection on natural resources in the context of peace agreements. We are, and I mentioned earlier, we're at a stage where resources and land are getting into almost all of the major peace agreements right now. But we have to now focus our attention on how do we ensure implementation of these commitments. Because in many ways, this is an example of unimplemented peace commitments. A lot of the issues in the mid-90s that were established in the peace agreements were not implemented. And as a result, we're seeing right now the wide range of social conflictivity around a range of disputes that even include micro-hydro projects. And it's because of never having addressed some of the structural or systemic issues. Changing gears to the third, post-conflict land disputes, Sri Lanka. Also, very similar work on this in East Timor a little bit earlier. Context, a series of post-conflict provinces with thousands of land disputes. Very complex political environment with a challenging set of relations between the government and the United Nations. I'm not going to go into that in this space, but a very challenging sort of dynamic around human rights and other issues. But I was asked to develop a land dispute mediation system for the post-conflict provinces to deal with those thousands of land disputes. The engagement, I went in through, I think, three different missions. First, we had to assess the situation and develop a clear understanding of the types of land disputes. What are the types of land disputes? What are their numbers? What's the scale of the problem that has to be addressed? Second key issue in assessing the situation is to understand what are the capacities to deal with conflict? What are the capacities to deal with mediation and conflict resolution? Capacities at the local level, down to the community level, and capacities nationally. Interesting and important to note, it was clear there's a long history and experience of community mediation in the country. What we did is work to design an integrated system for mediating and resolving land disputes. Involves elements of community-based mediation, the use of mediation, sort of more technical mediation, Sri Lankans who come in and work at the level using more traditional, if you will, or I should say trained mediation approaches to complementing the community mediation, the use of arbitration and linking things to the courts. By that I'm talking about an integrated system. It dealt with public and private lands as well. I had to link the two. I was involved in helping them draft a bill for Parliament that was jointly submitted, Ministry of Justice and Ministry of Lands, and if I understand correctly, has recently gone into law. And then also helped developing policies and training programs and even training manuals so that the implementation of the integrated system would have the capacities built of all the people who would have to operate that system and understand how it works. And I think it has the potential to resolve probably thousands of individual disputes over the next few years. It will be operating in multiplicity of schools sort of every Saturday morning throughout all of these provinces. Importantly also, we had to design a system that explicitly excluded certain disputes that were not suited to mediation, particularly disputes between certain state actors and large numbers of people, partly because of imbalances of power and partly because of the notion of state versus individual in the framework. A few lessons and observations, or this is an example, I think, of two things I've worth highlighting. First is the designing of an integrated dispute resolution system is a real reflection of where things are going. We're seeing more and more of that right now. In situations where we're looking at numerous disputes that are predictable and that continue coming forward, the notion of trying to deal with individual disputes is not as effective when we can now design systems that can deal with large numbers of disputes. The second is the fundamental importance of building on the capacity that exists in the context and locally. And I mentioned that last point. To anyone in the development field, that's pretty obvious. But to those of us who work in the mediation context that come in the political roles, it's not necessarily the autopilot. So the importance of understanding, it's not necessarily part of the traditional mediator skill set to actually build the skills of the parties who are in the disputes themselves. So I'll leave it at that and pass it back to David. Thank you.